if you are going to create something, right, and you want to create something that doesn't affect you as the creator, then there has to be certain qualities that you possess.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so when you really get down to the abstract, rational capacities of what we know today, and that is, well, in order to create beings that are sentient and have free will, then that is a necessary quality of the uncaused cause.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salty Pastor Podcast, a podcast dedicated to coaching you up in your faith. The more you know, the more you can grow. And our goal is not to tell you what to think, but to teach you how to think for yourself, because this is how your faith grows. What you believe and how you believe it is one of the most important things about you, and it's what helps you become a stronger person. My name is Jesser Mayer. I will be your host, but we cannot do this without the one, the only, the Salty Pastor himself, Dr. Douglas Peake.
Welcome, everybody. It's so good to be with you today. We are in the midst of a study kind of on the five proofs of God. It's a lot of philosophy, and boy, I really like this kind of stuff. So I hope that my excitement is not over exuberant in this regard. But I do enjoy this stuff. I think about this stuff a lot. So I'm glad you are going on this journey with me. Also, if you can help us out, go over to the old YouTubes and look us up, the Salty Pastor channel, and then like and subscribe, because that really helps this ministry and what we do grow. So help us out. It doesn't cost you anything to like and subscribe. So do that as much as you can. Tell your friends, share it with them. Really appreciate you being a part of this audience and what we are trying to do here, because I really believe it's making a difference.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really easy way to help grow the ministry, and we need every single one of you to help us out.
It's been growing.
Yep, it's been growing.
It's been growing. Keep it growing.
So we are in the middle of our series all about the five proofs of God and whether he exists or not, and mm-hmm. can we rationally show that, right?
Yeah.
And our first proof was the moral argument. We talked about that last mm-hmm. week. And then this week we're learning about the cosmological argument, yeah. Also known as the first cause argument. Basically, the premise is this, that premise one, everything that begins to exist has a cause. Mm-hmm. Premise two, the universe exists.
Or it began to exist.
Or it began to exist. Yep. And so therefore, the universe has a cause. I mean, this seems pretty, based on what you were talking about, this yeah. argument has been around for a really long time. This yeah. is not something that people just suddenly were like, well, you know, late 2020, I'm sitting trying to hoard toilet paper and figure out what I'm doing in my apartment. You know what? Let's talk about how we can yeah. prove God exists. Like, this has yeah. been around
started with
for
Aristotle.
A while. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think what's cool is it's pretty irrefutable. And yeah. I think mm-hmm. that's what's cool is, like, if you are willing to be reasonable and really think through it, it's really hard to refute.
Correct. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of power in the proof just based on its simplicity and other things. There's tons of different implications from this. And I think one of the things that what I'm hoping to do for you, the listener, is to understand sometimes the things that I think about and think on and then adopt really drive all of my thinking in the downstream of my life. Mm. I don't have to have a lot of beliefs, a lot of complicated beliefs, but I do need to have some specific core values that I know are true and that I'm absolutely convinced that they're true in their truthfulness. And those things then shape and mold my life all the way down the stream or down the line in a really positive way. And so I like drawing these connections and or interpreting the power of these proofs and how they actually impact your life. I kind of organize them into two categories, basically.
Okay.
And the first category has to do with the rational capacity of our intellect, you know, and that is like, how do I know I'm rational or not? You know, which is really interesting when you think about that. It's like, well, how do I know that I really am a rational person and it's not, we're just in the matrix and some computer is telling me what to see, feel, think, and smell. So that's actually a really great question to ask yourself. How do you know that you're rational? Descartes, he answered it this way. He said, I think, therefore I am. In other words, my capacity to rationally think means I'm a rational human being. I exist. And so that's a really big philosophical question that philosophers have asked. Is like, it's kind of like metaphysics, the nature of truth or the nature of being. How do we know that we are real, and how do we know that we are sentient and conscious and all of these types of things? So the first category has to do with that. And what this proof does is, it's kind of like the implication of it is that, well, if I accept the conclusion, then it proves to me that I am more rational, not less rational. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. Second category has to do with implications of not thinking rationally. So in other words, if I reject the conclusion of this argument as a proof, then I'm acting more irrational than rational. Therefore, in order to maintain my conclusions, in order to maintain my perception in life, my belief in something that is not logically or rationally accurate, that's going to spill over into every other area of my life. So I'm going to be driven by irrationality than rationality. So it's important to differentiate these categories and then kind of see how they apply. So let's go back to the first one a little bit.
Okay.
And yes. let me explain how this works, okay? First of all, this proof only uses provable scientific facts. That's it. It basically says, we know from a scientific standpoint that everything that begins to exist has a cause. That's proven. Newton proved it in physics. We know this at the quantum level, which, by the way, just so that the listener might not be aware of this, but Einstein's theory of relativity and quantum physics contradict each other completely. And they can't figure out why. They have never been able to find a unifying principle of how these things fit together. So that just goes to show you there's still lots to unpack and lots to learn. But in the end, physics, we live in a time-space continuum. And so for everything that comes into existence, there has to be a cause for it. Also, everything that happens is a reaction or response to something that happened to before it.
Right.
So we live in a cause and effect universe, and that's the complete basis of our understanding of space and time. Okay, so we know that. But what's also interesting is that the argument, this proof, exposes the imposters when it comes to its conclusion. And what I mean by imposters is people who say they're scientific, who say they're rational, but they refuse to accept the conclusion without trying to refute the premises.
Mm.
And that's what's really interesting. The impact is that their influence ends up undermining science, undermining scientific discovery, and undermining innovation. I've argued for quite some time that science has been hijacked by atheists, scientific materialists, naturalists, secularists, humanists, and so forth. And what they've done is, they've brought a religious bent, and I mean that in a negative sense, a belief system bent that is not rational but irrational into science, and then they kind of force science into what they want it to be. Therefore, what ends up happening is it undermines the purity of science, the innovative capacity of science to discover new things, because in their minds, science is no longer about pursuing what is true and real from an objective standpoint. Discovering the explanations of the universe in which we live, science now only exists to prove what they already believe. You see, so in other words, they have a paradigm that they're trapped in, and they're pursuing it not with objectivity, but with subjectivity. And, of course, that is the whole antithesis of science. Science is like, we want to try to create experiments. We're going to do tests that tell us things we don't know. so that we can objectively create a better picture of the future. What's really fascinating is in the scientific world, when you deal with things that are really, really big, like when you're dealing with the cosmos and the galaxies and the potential for life on other planets, the probabilities, mathematical equations to determine the potential of life and so forth. You get into these really big things, really big numbers and stuff like that. Is there's an actual revival of theism going on in those disciplines, because all these people are discovering this stuff and all the models of, well, there is no God, only the material universe exists, is just getting obliterated. And they're like, well, there has to be a God in order for all this, you know, and all these discoveries to make any sense whatsoever. And so that's really been quite fascinating. That's a, probably a whole nother podcast in and of itself. But I think that it's important to understand that. But the reason why these atheists and scientific materialists don't want to consider this proof, they don't want to adopt the rational conclusion of this truth, is because of what they predetermined they believe in their heart, that there is no God. Which, it's really interesting, instead of being open to objective rationality, they're closed to it. Instead of saying, well, whatever the truth dictates, I must be open to the conclusion. And that's what this proof does, is it really requires consideration of the first cause. Rationally, it forces you to consider the nature of the first cause. And we got into that a little bit on Tuesday, and I think today I just want to expand on that, and that is, a first cause, a cause that is able to cause what exists now, the reality in which we live, the space-time universe filled with the matter that it has, a first cause to create something of that nature out of nothing, ex nihilo, is got to be an uncaused cause. So it has to be infinite, not only in its existence, but also its in its power, in its scope. Right, it just, we can't fathom the expansive nature of God.
Right.
Now, it's very, you know, it's very hard to think in these terms because our minds are locked into space and time. So I know I'm being a little bit abstract, but in space and time, actual infinity does not exist. Aristotle argued this is a contradiction. It would be a paradox if it did, so it doesn't. And this is why the more rational you become, the more God becomes a necessary conclusion. And this, a lot of people don't want to believe or hear that.
Right. They want to hear something that supports what they believe, right? Like they are diluting the purity of the science, so they're only looking for things that would support what they are looking at. But like you said, there's a lot of science coming out that's actually stating the opposite. And the only way that makes sense is if there was something bigger, something beyond the scope of what we can comprehend in the space-time continuum, something infinite, right?
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting about this, I saw this a debate between Dr. William Lane Craig, it's pretty old, probably 20 years ago, and a British, he was an atheist, you know, and he was talking, he was a really smart guy, but what he was doing is he was, they got into this discussion talking about this cosmological argument. And Dr. Craig said, well, there has to be an uncaused cause. And he goes, well, why does that have to be God? It could be a computer, you know? And so he starts mocking Dr. Craig, right? It's, well, it's just a computer. It's not God. It's just a computer. How's my British accent?
It's something.
It's something. I need to work on it. What happened is this guy, so Dr. Craig, I thought, was really smart. And he goes, well, this computer would have to be infinite, right? Well, of course it would have to be able to create this universe. It would have to be all-powerful, yes, and have to be all-knowing, yes, you know, to be able to design all the physics and all the stuff. It'd have to understand life, and it'd have to be able to create sentience and free will, and so it must be personal, right? And then he goes, yes, it's just a computer that has all of these things. And he goes, well, what you're actually doing is you're describing in the Bible, what the Bible describes as all the characteristics of God. So you could call it a computer all day you want, but all you're talking about is God. So who's the irrational one here? Is that this is what it has to be, but I'm just going to call it a computer. Well, that means you're just being an idiot.
Yeah.
Right?
You're being petulant at that point.
Yeah, you're being petulant at that point. You're not being, oh, I'm so bright. No, you're not. And so that's why the first cause has to be personal. And this is probably one of the toughest things to conceptualize when you think in pure mathematical terms or rational terms, but I want to, let me try to explain it. And that is, because all atheists are scientific materialists or materialists, naturalists, that basically means they don't believe anything exists beyond this material realm.
Right.
Nothing exists outside of space. Nothing exists outside of time, or nothing exists outside of matter. Of course, now today, we see them attempting to contradict themselves because they're creating up multiverses and alternate realities and all these things. And these things are a result, I believe, of an attempt to try to explain, you know, the need for a computer that has all the attributes of God and not call it God, but a computer, right? And that's kind of what they're doing. But I think what's interesting is in their belief system, everything is determined. There is no free will. So how could a non-personal, non-free-willed entity, right, uncaused cause, create a universe of space, time, and matter without the act of creation itself somehow changing the cause? You see, in other words, if you were going to create something, right, and you want to create something that doesn't affect you as the creator, then there has to be certain qualities that you possess.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so when you really get down to the abstract rational capacities of what we know today, and that is, well, in order to create beings that are sentient and have free will, then that is a necessary quality of the uncaused cause. So the uncaused cause has to maintain the capacity to freely choose, to freely create, and to freely let go, or freely, you know, which also then free will, of course, is where love and beauty and compassion and all the virtues, you know, hope, all of these things exist. They don't exist outside of that. So you go, wow, all the greatest things about humanity are that we enjoy had to be created by a uncaused cause that has the same qualities. So then we go back to the original thing that we've talked about on the Salty Pastor all the time, and that is, what does it mean to be created in the image of God? And now you see why that's such a powerful statement in the book, first chapter of the book.
So let me pare it back to you so that I think that at least I understand, and hopefully the viewers will understand. You're basically saying, if, for example, we were created by a quote-unquote computer, and that computer didn't have the qualities of understanding of
Correct.
Love or free will or these things, that's not something it would give us because it doesn't understand them, it doesn't have them, so there's no way to impart them on the thing it's creating. It would be like me trying to impart Chinese on something I was coding if I don't know Chinese, right? Like, if I don't have that characteristic, if I don't have that knowledge, I can't impart it into something that I'm creating in a computer, right? Coding,
yes,
if I don't have the knowledge.
That is one aspect of it, absolutely.
And so, therefore, one aspect of God that we know is that he shares his nature, because the only way for us to have had it is if he knew it and understood it and was able to impart it. Like, it's similar to, like, teaching. Like, once you have to be kind of a master of it in order to share it with someone else, for the most part. You have to have at least an understanding higher than the average person to share it, right? If that's that's diluting the idea down quite
a
bit.
You are in the ballpark, my friend. You
I
are
like
on the
being,
right
I'm
path.
Close-ish.
Yeah, you're right. But it's also even more so is that if, like for instance, Hawking, he postulates this, and that is, well, there were these little bubbles of space and time, right, that were under that were compressed into the size of a proton, and then they exploded and created the universe. And so he's saying, okay, well, then the universe had to pre-exist in order to create itself.
Right.
And that's just an illogical ping-pong game that's insane. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And that's what he argued in the last book that he wrote. And so people said, well, he was a brilliant cosmologist, but he's a terrible philosopher. You know, absolutely. I mean, his philosophy is horrible because it's irrational. It doesn't make any sense. But that's basically it, is that the first cause not only has to have those qualities, but the first cause also has to be able to create a situation in which those qualities can flourish in and of their own accord without manipulation or coercion.
Right.
So,
which is a whole nother layer.
That's a whole nother layer. Then you go down and you go, okay, so, but what's the whole issue of free will? And that's what's so fascinating about this proof and the implications of it from a rational standpoint is I just get a kick out of the fact how so many atheists hate free will. They argue against it. They write books against it. It doesn't exist. We're all deterministic. And I'm like, I would hate to, you know, I feel bad for the ladies that you want to date. You know right. what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, how boring that must be. There's no love. There's no beauty. There's nothing that's awesome about being a human being available right. in a deterministic society or reality, I guess, is probably a better way to say it. So, yeah, you're right on track. And that's where you got to start. You got to start there, and then you want to go deeper and then
right.
deeper and then deeper. And only then that's where you go, oh, I'm starting to understand some real wisdom about my life because I finally I fear God. I respect God. I see God. Not in his entirety, but I see, wow, he is the uncaused cause.
Right. There's a deeper understanding and relationship because you now understand truly
how deep and complex it really is.
You can't even fully fathom it, right? And like we see that laid out so much in especially like Psalms or in things of that nature in the Bible where they're just like those guys that were, some of them even had the chance to like speak with God in one way or another. And they still were like, I still don't get it, right? Yeah. Like they've seen glimpses of his nature and they're still confused by it. So us studying
overwhelming.
It's overwhelming.
The immensity is overwhelming.
Well, let's dig into the second category because that was kind of an in-depth dive on your first category that you had mentioned. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you said there was a second category. So let's dive into that before we run out of time today.
Well, one of the things I love about the proof is its simplicity. When Einstein discovered the theory of relativity, it was admired because it was so simple. You know,
you don't need 400 caveats around it.
Right. It was, you know, E equals MC squared. And it was so many called it eloquent. You know, mathematicians said it's just eloquent. They not only loved its simplicity, they fell in love with its design.
Right.
And so that's why it was so amazing. On the other hand, this proof reflects that. It's very simple. And it rests upon provable scientific facts, not things that you're stretching in any way, shape, or manage,
There's no leaps.
Yeah, there's no leaps or anything you're reaching for to try to prove some, like, well, if you were to consider, well, it doesn't do that. It's just very, very simple. The proof also does something else, is it directs your thinking. And it makes things extremely clear. One of the implications of Einstein's theory of relativity is that it drove science in a very specific direction, right? And what it did is because it drove scientists in a very specific direction, what happened is it unleashed discovery, a direction that resulted in massive breakthroughs in science. You know, he discovered that and released it in the early 1900s. And then by 1940, they created the atomic bomb,
right?
You know, based on his theories. And so it's just really amazing at how fast it just exploded because what it did is it brought order out of the chaos and it focused everybody down this path.
I mean, and we see this in innovation all the time, right? Like, we start with the first 3D printer, and now there's 450 versions of it, and they're using it now to 3D print houses.
Houses, right?
Like they're using that technology, and once somebody has that breakthrough, then you start seeing, you know, innovation and replication and duplication, and then refinement, and it just sets everyone down to trying to finalize it. I mean, we see it in computers all the time, right? We had computers used to take up an entire building, and now it's like we walk around with one in our pocket all the time. Yeah. That's more powerful than anything that they've created.
What
in
sent
the past.
The men to the moon?
Yeah,
you know, it's more powerful than I was talking to Pastor Harv, and he says, "Yeah, you know, look at your phone." He goes, "Do you know what is one of the least things that people use their phones for? Making a phone call."
Yeah.
I just died.
100%.
So, but we use it for everything else. So what it did is it focused in the same way as that. What this proof does is it directs your thinking. It clarifies for you, oh, this is so clear to me now. And what it does is when you have that clarity of rational thought in your own life, what it does is it directs you towards more breakthroughs in your own life, more innovation in your own life. And this is so very important. Ever since atheists have tried to co-opt science for their religious agenda, we've fallen behind in the innovation department in regards to science. We don't have the massive breakthroughs as quickly as we have before. And people are asking, why is it in the last 30 to 40 years we don't have these massive, massive breakthroughs? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because the people who are supposed to be the smartest among us are acting the most irrational, because it's more important for them to believe there is no God than to say, I'm going to let science take me wherever it goes, and I want to have breakthroughs. Because what happens is when you start to understand that, this rational proof pushes you towards rational conclusions. You think more rationally, which pushes you to be more rational in your speculation and your innovation and your leaping forward. Does that make sense? So yeah. It's a subtle difference. It's kind of like, I don't know, this sounds like a crazy illustration, but it's like this. If a guy goes out to socialize, he's a single guy, and he's thinking, I'm so lonely, I have to get a date. He goes up, and he hits on women, and he strikes out every single time. Because all the women he meets are like, this guy's too thirsty or something. You know, there's something off about him. Right. But then the same guy, he doesn't care that he's single. He's just happy as a lark. He goes, man, I'm just going to go out and have a good time. I'm going to meet people. I'm going to see some friends. And he goes out and he's talking to his buddies. He meets some other women. And at the end of the night, he's got five women that want to go out with him. Okay, what's interesting there is it's all the ethos behind it. And I think the reason why science is lagging behind in America is because the ethos behind it is this absurd notion that we have to prove that God doesn't exist. We can't accept God. A lot of the people that are doing some of the biggest innovations are probably theists. They just don't trumpet it. Why? Because it forces their brain to work in a certain way that gives them more confidence and more rational capacity to innovate. So I think the other thing that's happening here is that atheists who've done this are undermining science. And this isn't a good thing for us, you know. Regardless of your position on the pandemic, right, you could think whatever you want to think about it. What we have discovered, though, is the end result is that fewer people trust scientists now. The trust in science has dropped dramatically. And people go, well, that's irrational. And I would say, no, I think it's completely rational, because they lied about the 6-foot thing, right? Fauci even came out and said, well, that's not based in science or anything at all. But we just thought it was a good idea. Okay, well, wait a second. I thought we're supposed to trust scientists because all they do is give us the facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
They misled us about the effectiveness of masks. You know, they actually lied about it. They started off saying, oh, masks don't make any difference. And then they start mandating masks. And then they come back around and say, well, they actually didn't make any difference in the end. You know, and I had to sit on planes, you know, and I had to pull my mask out and put a peanut in there and put it back. Or I got scolded by the flight attendant, you know. I mean, they lied about where it came from. They said over and over again, it had nothing to do with gain of function research in a Chinese lab. Well, turns out it did. You know, and all the leading people are saying, yeah, that's kind of what happened. They knew that it didn't affect children within the first 6 weeks of it. They knew that, but they closed schools for 2 years and did things and harmed kids so much. And then they turn around and say, well, you need to trust us because we're telling you the truth. Well, no, you're acting irrationally. And now fewer people trust science. And I think that is a social implication of what happens when you have people who won't allow simple proofs like this to drive their thinking. You know, a lot of doctors are really great people, love them to death, but they have high control tendencies. You know, it's like, well, I know better and I'm going to dictate how everybody else should live. Well, that's not a good thing, because that doesn't instill confidence in the science. And we need to get back to that. This proof, in its simplicity, should push people back into the world of objectivity instead of subjectivity. And it's subjectivity, doing what people want or feel is right as opposed to what is actually right, is where so many of our problems are coming from. And that's why this proof is so important.
Well, talk to me in our last couple minutes How does this lack of rationality that we're seeing, especially in the scientific community, that's trying to, they're on basically a witch hunt to prove that they're right. Yeah. How does this affect individual people, right? Like, not everyone's a scientist, so how is this affecting us individually?
Well, you know, we've had this thing in America called the separation of church and state, right?
Right.
What we should have is a separation of state and science, right? Because now what's happening in our educational system, and I chronicle, you know, I kind of lay this out a little bit in my book and some in other areas, is that the inability to understand the cause and effect in regards to your own individual life is having a dramatic ramification on the nation in which we live. For instance, socialism, communism are taking root in our society because there's no understanding of the cause and effect of these ideologies on people. The history isn't taught. And then when you teach people to think in irrational ways, it's like, well, I believe it's better for people, and so it has to be right. You know, and you talk to people who believe in communism on a campus today, and one of their main things they always say is that, well, nobody has implemented communism properly. And you just want to lie and say, well, then what makes you think you can implement it?
Right.
It wasn't implemented properly. It doesn't work.
Right.
Because it denies the very nature of humanity. And so I think it's a terrible, terrible thing. But people can't draw those conclusions. Older people look at younger people today and go, why are they struggling so much? Why can't they understand that what they believe in the ideologies they've adopted, you know, make these things happen in their own life? Why can't they see that? Well, that's because, right, the system has abandoned rational thinking, which is we live in a cause and effect reality, and that's what this whole proof is based on. You live in a cause effect reality. Young people today aren't taught about how to think through the cause and effect relationship between what they believe and how their life actually works. And it's just so crazy. This is why you have people today, just yesterday I saw a protest of people on a university campus. They were protesting about Palestine, you know, that there's this thing going on with Hamas, the terrorists who came across their border, killed 1,300 Israelis, kidnapped a bunch of them, and then took them back across the border. And so they said today that we want Palestine to be free. And you know what the name of their organization was? Gays for Palestine. Which, it's like, you know that Palestine, and particularly Hamas, regularly executes people simply because they think they're effeminate. Or they whenever they want to get rid of somebody, they accuse them of homosexuality and then kill them. And there was one just recently, 2 weeks ago, where there were twin brothers, and one brother was forced to execute his twin brother because he was accused of being homosexual. And I'm just like, okay, do you understand how incongruent this is? You know, but they don't. Now, how in the world can people be this irrational? Well, because they've been raised to think irrationally. And the bottom line is, it's heartbreaking. There's no unified culture that can exist without some type of foundation that we all agree on. And the problem right now today is that, particularly in America, because of this irrational secularist thinking, we no longer have that. You know, Ronald Reagan famously said, we must remember that we are one nation under God, or we will be a nation gone under. And so this is why we are a nation that's on the decline. And I don't think we can enter into a time of growth or innovation or rebirth or renewal or reformation or any of all those really, really good things if we continue to become increasingly irrational. And that's why this proof is not only great to say, hey, there is a God, it's also great because it helps mold and shape our thinking for future prosperity and success.
Well, thank you, Pastor Doug, for sharing all those things with us. Thank you guys for joining us today. And I'm excited to hear more about the cosmological argument on Sunday here at Foothills. And if you guys aren't tuning in for that, make sure you tune in next week here on The Salty Pastor as we continue our study of the five proofs of God.
Always think for yourself.